National Catholic Register. This is Register Radio, bringing light and clarity to the news and topics that affect your life.
The terrible events in Charlottesville, Virginia, displayed hatred and racism at its worst. How can such evil be overcome? The answers may not be easy, but God can do mighty things. Catholic author Joseph Pierce knows firsthand. Here on Register Radio, Joseph tells his story of how God brought him out of the white supremacist racism of his youth to the light of truth. Then we turn to the upcoming solar eclipse. Is there a Catholic angle? I'm Jeanette DeMello, editor-in-chief of the National Catholic Register.
And I'm Matthew Bunsen, the Register's senior editor. Well, of course, Jeanette, we're talking about the tragic events, the bloody events in Charlottesville, Virginia, where one woman was killed and many more were injured when a car drove into a crowd of counter-protesters gathered at a rally of white supremacists and apparently neo-Nazis. The man driving the car apparently was part of a fascist group.
That's right. And our guest today, Joseph Pierce, who's an author and now is working for the Augustine Institute in Colorado, in Denver, has a very interesting story to tell. He brings a truly unique and important perspective to the events in Charlottesville. And he's written about this tragedy on ncregister.com. Joseph, thanks for being with us.
Well, my pleasure.
So when did you first become aware of the events that were happening and the violence that was happening in Charlottesville?
Well, I think obviously the news became viral very quickly in all the various media outlets, or even someone like me that does my best to be unplugged found out about it pretty simultaneously, I imagine.
What were your first thoughts?
Well, a somewhat tragic sense of deja vu, because what happened in Charlottesville at the weekend was very, very similar to the life that I lived back in the 1970s and 1980s back in England, when I was a member of a white supremacist group, and the violence on the streets between our group and our enemies was something that was almost a weekly event. And I was at a demonstration in 1979 where a counter-demonstrator was killed, and at a subsequent demonstrator, one of my colleagues was killed by a counter-demonstrator. So this was all somewhat close to home, at least mm-hmm. close to my previous home, long before my conversion to Catholicism.
Yeah, it's truly sad to see such violence erupting. And I think that, Joseph, you can help us in some way to understand maybe in part where the origin of these kind of sentiments come from. In your piece at the Register, you wrote, we titled it, Charlottesville Through the Eyes of an Ex-White Supremacist. That's at ncregister.com. And you do speak a little bit of, in your own life, where these sentiments came.
Yes, I think that part of the problem of our secularist age is that virtue is no longer part of anybody's education. The very word virtue has been sort of banned from secular discourse. Mm-hmm. And, you know, some virtues, such as humility and chastity, are openly ridiculed. And what we have instead, in place of that, is a sort of the relativist legacy of the ideas of philosophers such as Friedrich Nietzsche that are rooted in pride. So, you know, the word pride, whether it's on issues of sexuality or whether it's on issues of race, mm-hmm. Basically pride is now ruling the roost, and it's making myself strong by identifying myself with something that I've constructed for myself. And, you know, for some people that might be sexuality, but I suspect, and the danger is for many more people, it's going to be more tribal. And I think that, if you know, now that we've forgotten about virtue, now that we've forgotten about humility, we're going to find pride taking its place, and that will include racial pride. And I think that what we're doing actually is reaping the harvest of the wickedness of the secularism of the culture in which we find ourselves.
It's not that often, though. I mean, at least not in my perception, that such violence comes out of pride. Unfortunately, it seems to be becoming more and more violent. Do you see that, or do you have a different perspective, having seen a different past?
I think pride always breeds violence, and not only did I see it in the 1970s and 1980s in England with my own racial pride, and also the pride of the opponents. We mustn't forget that the so-called anti-fascist demonstrators, for the most part, are extremist Marxists and communists who also breed and feed on anger and hatred and resentment and envy and all these sinful things. So it's really both sides feeding off of each other in a feeding frenzy of mutual hatred. And you know, we go back further. Pride was at the core of the Russian Revolution. Pride was at the core of the rise of the Nazis. Basically, when we start talking about pride and instead of humility, we're going to end up with angry and violent narcissistic people. And you know, narcissism and Nazism are actually akin. They're kindred spirits.
Well, Joseph, we have seen the vivid images of the protesters and the counter-protesters. Help our listeners to understand what goes on in the mind of a protester at an event like this, because it may be difficult for people to comprehend exactly what the thought processes are.
Well, first of all, we have to understand it's irrational. Hatred is not a rational emotion. So both sides, and we do need to insist that it's both sides, that both sides hate each other. It's not that one side's on the side of love and the other side's on the side of hatred. These extremists are both sides of the spectrum, if you like, are united, ironically, by a mutual hatred. I can only go back to my own time and my own feelings, trying to get back inside my old head, if you like. And I would rejoice when my enemies were killed or hurt, I would have no sympathy whatsoever. And I'm sure that's the case with the neo-Nazis, with the tragic death last weekend. But you know, but if a neo-Nazi were killed, and the people on the other extreme would also rejoice. So we don't want to fall into the trap of joining one hate-filled party because of opposition to the other.
Now we're talking here to Joseph Pierce, who wrote a piece at the Register, Charlottesville Through the Eyes of an Ex-White Supremacist. Joseph, your story is beautiful. The story does not end with hate. It does not end with pride. And somehow God was able to do the mighty deed of reaching into that hate and pride and turning it on its head. How did that happen?
Well, I think that the two things, one is reason and the other is love, and also coming to the understanding that the reason and love are not two separate things, that a Christian understanding of love is very rational. So coming upon Catholic writers, I was very anti-Catholic as well as being racist, by the way, but coming across Catholic writers like G.K. Chesterton and Hilaire Belloc and Christian writers such as C.S. Lewis, and eventually during my I went to prison twice for my involvement with the white supremacists, and during the second prison sentence, I started reading St. Thomas Aquinas. But the other story I tell in my book that relays my conversion, Race with the Devil, is how on three separate occasions my enemies, instead of hating me, showed me love and kindness and friendship, and how disarming that was. You need to remember that people that deal in hatred, that think in hatred, we expect our enemies to hate us, and we're comfortable there. That's our comfort zone. We want our enemies to hate us. It's the old eye for an eye mentality. And you hate me, I hate you. You hurt me, I hurt you. And if you like, we feed off each other and build our own hatred off of the hatred of the other. But when you, instead of getting hatred in return from an enemy, you get love. It's completely disarming. And you can't help but have some sort of sense of gratitude and sympathy for the person who's returned your scorn and your hatred with friendship and forgiveness. It's very powerful. And I think that's our challenge, is to actually take our Lord at his word and to learn not just to love our neighbors, but to learn to love our enemies. And that's much, much more difficult, but that's what our Lord tells us to do. It's much easier to stand at a distance and point the finger of scorn at neo-Nazis or their sort of Marxist enemies, and instead of actually praying for them and hoping one day, by the grace of God, they'll pray with us.
That's completely countercultural. It's so true that's what is needed, but it's so countercultural.
Yeah, but you know, Christians have always been countercultural, so countercultural that they strung our founder up on a cross. It's what we are. We're not meant to be at home and comfortable in the world. This is a valley of tears, but we're meant to bring the love of Christ to this valley of tears, and without Christ, it is nothing but tears.
Joseph, you mentioned in your piece that you had several encounters, occasions where you confronted an enemy with hatred and enmity and received in return love and friendship. And in each case, you said, the receiving of love when I was expecting hatred sowed seeds of healing in my hate-battered heart. It's a beautiful sentence. If you could speak directly to these groups, members of it, what would you say?
That basically that the social justice can only be built upon a true understanding of love, and a true understanding of love is not about arguing for our rights, but for accepting and embracing our responsibilities, and that ultimately is laying down our lives for our brothers and sisters. That's what love is. It's to lay down our lives for the other. And that is countercultural, and it's truly revolutionary, much more revolutionary than the different types of hatred that we saw on the streets in Charlottesville last weekend.
Joseph, thank you so much for being with us. I want to repeat the book, Race with the Devil. That is the book that tells your story. I think it's very important to hear this story at this moment in time. We've got maybe 30 seconds left, and I know you've been trying to get more of this story out there, especially this week. Have you had many opportunities to give your input throughout this week?
Yes, obviously I've been asked to give my viewpoint as an ex-white supremacist in the wake of last weekend's tragedy, and I'm hoping that people will be directed to my own story and maybe inspired by it. Now, I was a white supremacist in prison. The young man who is alleged to have driven that car is now also a young white supremacist in prison. I don't believe that anybody is beyond the love of God or beyond the reach of God. I hope that my own story is living proof of that, and I don't think we should demonize our enemies. We should love them and pray for them.
On that note, we will draw to a close. Again, thanks for being with us, Joseph Pierce.
My pleasure. God bless you.
When we come back, we will be joined by Register editor, our blog editor, Kevin Knight, to discuss the upcoming solar eclipse. This is Register Radio on EWTN Global Catholic Radio Network. More when we return.
Bishop Robert Barron talks about the importance of the National Catholic Register.
You know, the Register delivers something which is extremely important because you won't get it from the mainstream media, namely the Catholic context and perspective. Sometimes the mainstream media will pretend, oh, they don't have a perspective. They're just giving the news neutrally. Well, no one does that. Everyone's got a perspective. What they often bring is a sort of secularist ideology. The National Catholic Register brings a robustly Catholic take on the world, and that's indispensably important.
For a free 6-issue trial of the National Catholic Register, go to ncregister.com and click on the 6 free issue banner, or call 800-421-3230 for your 6 free issues. And as you await your first issue, enjoy our online content.
Let's return to Register Radio on EWTN.
Welcome back. I'm Jeanette DeMello along with Matthew Bunsen, and we are talking about the solar eclipse and if there's a Catholic angle. Of course, the solar eclipse is happening on Monday, August 21st, so just a few days away. And ironically or strangely, we have two weathermen on the Register team, Matthew. They're not practicing weather, if you will. They're not telling the weather, but they're pretty good at predictions. One of them is Brian Horvath, who does our marketing and subscriptions, and the other is Kevin Knight, who is our blog and social media editor. And Kevin, thanks for joining us now.
All right, thanks for having me.
Okay, Mr. Weatherman, what's a solar eclipse and why is everyone in such a tizzy about this one?
Well, a solar eclipse, I like how one comic I saw today just got to the heart of it. It's when one big thing moves in front of another big thing. and that's the root of everything. But it just so happens that one of the big things is the moon, and the other one is the sun. And it's one of the most amazing apparent coincidences in the solar system. This is the only place it can happen, and it's just amazing how precise it is.
How frequently does it happen?
It varies. At any point on Earth, it happens every 375 years on average.
What?
This particular type of eclipse, a coast-to-coast eclipse in the United States, has not happened since 1918.
Oh, wow.
Okay. And that's the only other one since the United States gained its independence. So it's not common.
So there's no one alive who has seen this kind of solar eclipse.
Very few people.
Okay, so what is it exactly going to look like? And I definitely have been told I should be wearing a certain kind of glasses.
Well, the glasses, that's for much of North America. You'll see a partial eclipse.
Mm-hmm.
And so really it may be dimmer. The light may be a bit dimmer depending on how close you are to the center, but that's when the glasses are necessary.
Okay.
Once, if you're in the path of totality, once the final bits of light glimmer through the mountains and the craters of the moon and it's totally covered, everyone will be able to take off his glasses.
Okay.
And look directly.
Okay.
And if it's clear skies, see the corona. So,
awesome. Now, one of the reasons I wanted to have you on, it's not because of your background in weather, although we always have fascinating conversations about the weather, and you can tell me exactly when I need to leave the building in order to avoid the rain. but it's because you and your family are going to be viewing this eclipse in a special way. What are you guys doing?
Right. Our plans are to go to Lincoln, Nebraska. We'll be there. We'll actually start the morning at a retreat center with Adoration of the Blessed Sacrament and Mass, and then we'll be on our way to the center of the Path of Totality. So the path also, from there, crosses through Atchison, Kansas, nearby.
Mm-hmm.
We won't be able to attend that, but that's going to be the site of the biggest eclipse party, I think, in the United States,
and
at Benedictine.
It's a Catholic eclipse party, too.
Catholic eclipse party.
We're talking about Benedictine College in Kansas, Atchison, Kansas, and they are having an all-day-long celebration. They will be opening a new observatory. And Kevin, what are some of the other events that are going to be taking place that day?
Well, one of the key events, and it's the entire weekend, as I understand, is they'll have lectures from the Vatican Observatory, and the Vatican Observatory Foundation is connected with this. And there will be a general tone of celebration of the Church's connection with science,
okay.
and very close connection. This is as Catholic as you can get. Looking at it with the eyes of faith and reason.
So, Kevin, why is it so important for you to take your family out to see this, to a Catholic place to see it? What are the lessons to be learned in an occasion like this?
Well, I've seen lots of people talking about what's motivating them, and sometimes it gets philosophical and a little deep. For me, it's very simple. And a little bit about myself. When I was away from the church for a few years, what brought me back into the church, it was the oddest experience. It wasn't an intellectual conversion or anything like that, anything customary. I was fascinated suddenly and mysteriously by the ocean, and especially by whales, by sea life. It was just this profound sense of awe. It had nothing to do with suddenly becoming an environmentalist or anything like that. It was just inexplicable. And suddenly, one day after a month or so, it very explicitly became awe of the Most Blessed Trinity. So this sense of wonder and awe, the fear of the Lord.
Right.
A filial fear of the Lord is a gift given to us at baptism. in my case, it lay dormant for several years. And our Lord used the wonders of creation to bring me speechlessly back to the Catholic Church.
Beautiful.
And in this sort of sense of awe, it's rare and it's hard to find. And it is a gift. It's not something that can be just generated within oneself. But seeing something awesome, not in the new sense of the word, but the old sense, is a great gift, and it leads to wisdom.
Absolutely.
And that's what I'm hoping to see.
Absolutely. What a beautiful gift for your children. One of the people who will be at the Benedictine College celebration, this is one of the two Jesuit astronomers from the Vatican Observatory. His name is Father Paul Gaber. And he said something very similar, Kevin. He said that the sky has been one of the most powerful sources of inspiration. And of course, you're talking about the ocean. I think it's the other source of very powerful inspiration. He said the starlit sky is the most accessible and universal reminder that there are things that transcend our earthly preoccupations. And this is in an article that we ran online, ncregister.com. It's called From Coast to Coast, America is Throwing an Eclipse Party. So it is truly amazing how nature, how awesome sights can lure us into the majesty of God.
It really is. It's St. John of the Cross. His brothers sometimes would have to come and take him away from his window at night in his cell because he could not take his eyes off the night sky. And of course, he had no city lights to disturb it. It was just, he was rapt seeing this.
And
when
Kevin,
you look at the churches that were built with a sense of awe in mind, you will also see a feature that many people miss now and most tourists. The great cathedrals of Europe, many of them have an oculus, a small opening up near the top, which traces a brass plate across the floor called a meridian. So the churches themselves could be used as giant solar observatories.
Oh, very nice. I think of the Pantheon in Rome. Of course, it wasn't created as a church, but it has a huge hole in the top for you to peer through. It's a beautiful, beautiful sight. Matthew, you wanted to jump in here.
I was going to say, Kevin, you've talked about the awe and majesty of creation, and it raises an important point, especially for young Catholics, the relationship between faith and reason, that the faith and science are not in opposition to each other, and the more we study science, the more we can come to appreciate the beauty and importance of creation. So what are you doing, especially with your family, along those lines?
Well, it's a constant conversation with us. I want to make the faith plausible and reasonable, and that's a classical Catholic approach. I mentioned earlier there's a phenomenon that occurs just at the last few seconds before totality, when the sun is shining through the craters and mountains on the edge of the moon. And 35 of those craters on the moon are named after Jesuit priests precisely because of the work that the Church has always done in science. Science is the daughter of the Church. And this is an excellent opportunity, whether with my family or at Benedictine or all across North America, to impart that to a new generation.
Wait, and you're hitting on something very important that a lot of Catholics don't even appreciate, and that is the role of Catholic priests and Catholics in the development of science. Of course, we need to say nothing more other than the name Georges Lemaître, who was responsible for the Big Bang Theory. Everyone thinks it was someone like Einstein, when in fact it was this incredible priest of the early 20th century.
Absolutely. And Father Lemaître, the father of the Big Bang, there are connections with the solar eclipse, because Einstein became intrigued with some of these theories. Later on, Einstein's own theories actually were confirmed by the solar eclipse of 1918. So this, And Father Lemaitre thought nothing of it to be both a priest adoring our Lord in the Holy Mass and then a scientist studying nature and God's creation to encounter God in another way.
Mm-hmm. And just a way of a little trivia, Jean Picard, and we always think of Jean-Luc Picard of Star Trek, was a French astronomer and a priest. And he was a brilliant astronomer, and it is generally thought that the name Jean-Luc Picard for the character for Star Trek was named after a Jesuit priest.
Oh, interesting.
Oh, really?
Very interesting. So the Register has on our website right now the story about Benedictine College, but we also have a few other places that we've highlighted. I wanted to make sure to call out these places in Springfield. And Belleville, Illinois, there are schools and in the diocese and parishes that are hosting field trips for the kids to view the eclipse. In Hopkinsville, Kentucky, it's considered the area of the point of greatest eclipse. And there's a church there, St. Peter and Paul Catholic Church, that is hosting an event. Fremont, Nebraska has an event going on at one of their Catholic schools. St. Louis has diocesan-wide events. And in Lander, Wyoming, Wyoming Catholic College has arranged a backpacking trip to see the eclipse, of course, in the beauty of light-polluted sky. So we've got a lot of places who are really focusing on this. I hope everyone here also gets to focus. Remember, for more news, analysis, and commentary, check out the ncregister.com website. And thanks for joining us here on Register Radio. We're on EWTN, Global Catholic Radio Network. For Matthew Bunsen and our producer, Jeff Burson, I'm Jeanette DeMello. Until next week, God bless.
For more information about the National Catholic Register and about Register Radio, go to ncregister.com. Podcasts of Register Radio are posted on ncregister.com and on ewtn.com. Join us next week at this time for Register Radio on the EWTN Global Catholic Radio Network.